It's the morning show. I'm Glenn Mobergen for Kate Archer Kent. This morning, we're going to talk about garbage, a lot of it, in places that it shouldn't be, in our oceans, and closer to home for us in Wisconsin, in our lakes. This past week, we learned that the Great Pacific Garbage Patch is now twice the size of Texas and growing exponentially. It contains an estimated 79,000 tons of plastic debris, from large fishing nets to microscopic particles. It's a big problem, and a little one. And as we'll learn this morning, the Great Lakes that border our state and even Lake Winnebago are not immune. Our guest for this hour is Lorena Rios Mendoza. She's an associate professor of chemistry at UW-Superior and an internationally known researcher on microscopic plastic pollution in our waterways. Lorena, welcome to the morning show.
Hi, good morning. Thank you for having me in your show.
Well, thanks for being with us, and we'd also like to invite our listeners to join the discussion. Have you seen plastic pollution in your local lakes and rivers? If so, what did you see? What concerns or questions do you have about plastic pollution in the ocean? What about in the Great Lakes or local water bodies? Or maybe you think concerns about plastic are exaggerated. Give us a call at 1-800-642-1234. That's 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at ideas@wpr.org, or you can tweet us at WPR Mornings. Lorena, let's turn first to the broad challenge of plastic pollution in our water, which rose to the surface, so to speak, in recent days, with headlines about the size of the Great Pacific Garbage Patch. That patch is at least four times the size we thought it was. So lay it out for us. What's the scope of the problem here?
Yeah, you know, the plastic problem in the Pacific Ocean is so huge because the area is really huge too, yeah? And we have a, you know, that we found that is really, you know, it's crazy the amount of plastic that we saw in the ocean. And here in the Great Lakes, you know, in the 2012 was the first time that we collected samples from Lake Superior, Huron, and Lake Erie. And, of course, the Lake Erie was where we found it more microplastic. These very small sizes of plastic, this is that surprised me because, you know, my experience was mainly in the ocean. But here in the Great Lakes where we found that these micro beads, the micro pellets from the cosmetic products, and the sizes that I'm saying is very small.
Well,
and I'm sorry.
Well, with this Great Pacific Garbage Patch, is it all microscopic particles, or are there bigger chunks of things floating in that patch as well?
We found that everything. You can find a huge, like, 1.5 meters in size. And you can find in lower than 1 millimeter.
So are there things like old fishing nets and fishing line in the Great Pacific Garbage Patch?
Yes, you can find a lot of buoys. You can find a lot of fragments. And you can find pre-production plastic, the pellets.
Well, what threats do these patches pose for ocean life? We've seen pictures of birds and fish and turtles tangled up in fishing nets and fishing line.
I'm sorry. What was the question?
What threats do these the plastic in these patches pose for ocean life?
Yeah, you know, mainly is the 85% of the marine debris in the ocean is plastic, and the main source is the land. Other source is the boat, you know, for the fishing activities, but it's mainly the land. We are the source of this plastic. And it's traveling, you know, around to the sources could be the Japan, Asia, old Asia, and Canada, U.S. And the water in the ocean is moving and ended in this garbage patch very close to the Hawaii.
So it's between California and Hawaii. Is this the only big plastic garbage patch that's out there, or are there others in other parts of the oceans?
Oh, no, we have five.
We have five of them, okay.
Yes. But the highest concentration is that we found it at the first that we studied was the North Pacific Gyre.
Now, you mentioned these smaller microscopic particles of plastic. What threats do they pose? Most people would think, well, these are so small that we don't have to worry about them.
No, this is the problem. A smaller the size means it's more dangerous. Why? Because can be easily confused by the natural food and then is easily ingested by the fish, for example. And a smaller the size can concentrate more toxic compounds. That is my main interest, study the plastic. What is the absorption of the persistent organic pollutants and the surface of these plastic particles.
All right, very good. We've got a caller who's interested in this very subject. Let's go to Margo in Madison. Margo, you're on with Lorena. Hello, Margo. Well, we don't have Margo, but the question she was going to ask is, she's heard that plastic is getting brittle, breaking into tiny particles, and that fish are eating it, and then we end up eating the fish. Can you tell when you catch a fish or you're about to consume one, whether or not it's consumed some of these plastic particles?
In the ocean, yes, we opened several fish and we found that very small particles of the plastic, these small fragments. We opened already here in Lake Superior, like 2,000 stomach fish. We analyzed and just we found that fiber. And I can say that 50% of the fibers are synthetic, like a polyester, and the other 50% could be the cotton, natural fibers.
Okay. So we find these microscopic beads and these fibers even in places like Lake Superior.
Yes.
You know, you've got you're a professor of chemistry at UW Superior, so I'm sure you're very familiar with Lake Superior. Most of us who have seen the lake are impressed with how clean and pristine the water is. It defies expectations that it would be polluted with plastic particles.
Yeah, you know, I can say in the Great Lakes, the Lake Superior is the cleanest, you know, but this no mean it's really clean because really we found that the microplastic. And the main points that I can tell you the microplastics go to the lake is the wastewater treatment plant. And this doesn't mean that the wastewater treatment plant are the source, because at the end, we, the humans, are the source of this plastic. But because the small sizes, really, the wastewater treatment plant cannot retain it. And then all the effluent water, when they put it in the lake, go with this microplastic.
How bad is the pollution, the plastic pollution in the Great Lakes? Let's take the lake that is commonly believed to have most of the problems, Lake Erie.
You know, the Lake Erie is a huge problem because it's really high concentration of microplastic. And I did the analysis of the toxic compounds that we found, the toxic compounds. And I did analysis of this here in Lake Superior, mainly in the San Luis River that connect with the Lake Superior, because we have one big wastewater treatment plant from Duluth. Mm-hmm. The concentration of the persistent organic pollutants, I don't found the PCBs and I don't found the pesticides like DDTs. Just I found the polyaromatic that is incomplete combustion from the gasoline. And I can tell you it's relatively clean because this plastic is pretty new. This means don't have enough time in the water that can concentrate more toxic compounds. And in the San Luis River, they start to take in the sediment. This means they cleaning the area, yeah, for this.
Well, why is the plastic a problem? Does it pick up other toxic materials like PCBs and DDT and dioxins? Is that one of the problems that we're dealing with here?
This is the main problem, exactly, because the plastic fragments can concentrate all these kind of toxic compounds. You know, the plastic are working like a sponge, cleaning the water, because they are absorbing all the toxic compounds. And then we can think, oh, this is really good. And it is. But the problem is how we can say to the fish, hey, don't eat this because this is bad.
Lorraine, I want you to hold that thought. We've got to take a break for news, but I want to pick up on it when we come back. We will continue our dive into the plastic pollution of oceans, lakes, and rivers after news from NPR and Wisconsin Public Radio. Lorena Rios-Mendoza is an associate professor of chemistry at UW-Superior. I'm Glenn Mobergen for Kate Archer Kent. Stay with us. The Morning Show. I'm Glenn Mobergen for Kate Archer Kent. Today we're talking about the effects of our ubiquitous use of plastics, which have been dumped into the oceans and our lakes. We learned this past week that the Great Pacific Garbage Patch, containing 79,000 tons of plastic, has grown to twice the size of Texas. Lorena Rios-Mendoza is an associate professor of chemistry at UW-Superior and an internationally renowned researcher on microscopic plastic pollution in our oceans and our lakes. Have you seen plastic pollution in your local lakes and rivers? If so, what did you see? What concerns do you have about it? And maybe you think concerns about plastic are exaggerated. Give us a call at 1-800-642-1234. That's 1-800-642-1234. You can send us an email at ideas@wpr.org, or you can tweet us at WPR Mornings. Let's go right to the phones. We have Tom in Port Wing. Tom, you are on the morning show with Lorena Rios-Mendoza.
Well, good morning, and thanks for taking my call. This story about plastic being an island twice the size of Texas out in the ocean is actually a false story. I'm not in favor of pollution, but I think it's not a good idea to exaggerate the fact that there is pollution in the ocean. That type of an island twice the size of Texas couldn't even exist in the ocean as one clump because of the ocean currents and the movements of the ocean. While there is a lot of pollution in the ocean, that story is false, and it doesn't advance the environmental issues that when you promote a story that's not true, you do damage to the legitimate pollution and the legitimacy of the story.
All right. Tom, let me ask you a question. How do you know that it's not true? The study that came out this past week, they used multiple aircraft and multiple ships in order to assess exactly how big this island of pollution is.
There may be some areas where there's a large concentration of plastics floating, but it is certainly not the size of Texas or twice the size of Texas. That's my issue with it. It's an exaggeration, and you don't need to exaggerate. We know there's pollution. We know it's a problem, but don't tell falsehoods in order to make the case. That's my issue. Okay.
All right, Tom, thank you for your phone call. Lorena Rios-Mendoza, is Tom right? Are we talking about something that doesn't really exist here?
Okay, you know, let me tell you. The North Pacific Jar is a huge area with a high pressure system, yes, and then this produces that clockwise ocean current. This means we don't have one specific point in the ocean where is the jar. This means it's moving because it's in function to the high pressure. Yeah? And then, but this pressure that produces a circular wind that produces the circular ocean currents, which spirals inward and dips slightly at the center. And this is why all the plastic debris has a tendency to be trapped in this area, in this specific gyre.
So it's because of the ocean currents that all the plastic ends up in one area. Is it indeed twice the size of Texas? Our caller seemed to think that that couldn't be the case.
Yeah, you know, it's really big, and then it changed in size, can I say, you know, but that we can think is huge. The area where we start to see and how they increase the pressure, we can easily, you know, when you are there, you can see easily how it's increasing, and we can find the highest point in the pressure where we sit is the center, and it's where we found the huge amount of the plastic. And, you know, when you are in this area, you can see the masses of the water, because we have different masses of the water with humidity, temperature, and density. They move in different direction, and in the middle, you can see is the formation like a river, and that river is like a carried for miles and miles plastic, a lot of plastic.
So you have rivers of plastic flowing into the ocean.
In the ocean, yes, I saw that, you know, and it's very sad, and we can just try to follow, and it was miles and miles, and then we stopped because we continue with the collection of the samples. And normally I'm saying to the people, yes, it's not like a one huge island of the plastic that you can see the accumulation, you know, because you can find one big item, and the small fragments, you don't see it because the size in the water, yeah? Or sometimes you can see like a point or something. But in 2014, when we went there, we really found it a plastic island. We found it 70 buoys tied together, and each buoy is the size in 1.5 meters. And this was a plastic island. You know, and was accumulate a lot of the fragment plastic, kilos and kilos of plastic.
Lorena, is this floating island of plastic? Is this the one that you're talking about in the Pacific?
Yes,
the one in the Pacific. Now, I've got another question for you: is all the plastic on the surface of the ocean, or does it extend all the way down to the ocean floor?
You know, yes, because the mainly plastic that we found floating in the ocean is polyethylene and polypropylene, because the density is lower than the seawater, and it's very close to the lake water. It's one. We can see that. This is why we found it floating. But we have more than 1,000 different kinds of plastic, and most of them are heavy. This means zinc. And then in the sediments, I'm sure we can find more plastic than in the surface. But because the polyethylene and polypropylene are the main plastic used in our modern society in different countries, this is where we found a lot floating.
Are fish living in these in this floating garbage patch? Is there other sea life still living in it?
Oh, yeah. In this plastic that I told you in 2014, I can see the synthetic reef, because below you can see different kind of fish eating, living, dying with plastic.
So how do you fix this? First of all, it's in international waters, so there's no way that any one country is responsible for it. And I don't think we've got the technology to create some huge aircraft carrier-sized ship with giant scoops that would scoop all of the plastic up. What can we do about it?
You know, one of the things that now the people is proposing to build a boat that with the solar panels can work in automatic and alone, and using the infrared and collect the plastic and try to separate these two main types of plastic, the polyethylene, polypropylene, and the others. But the problem is now is how we can find the money to do it, yes? Because they can collect the plastic, but and then another boat needs to go to collect whatever this was collected, and how we can recycle, because most of the plastic we cannot recycle. It's more expensive. Do it. However, I know some people try to work with the convert all the plastic in oil again. But the main problem that I can see it is with these toxic compounds, maybe we can release all these toxic compounds to the atmosphere. But there are people working, trying to, how we can fix that.
People are trying to come up with a solution. 1-800-642-1234 if you'd like to talk to researcher Lorena Rios Mendoza about the giant plastic patch that's floating in the ocean. Let's go to Jeremy in Racine. Jeremy, you are on the morning show with Lorena Rios Mendoza.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I have a question. How much of the plastic that the wildlife actually gets consumed is actually broken down and absorbed into the body, meaning that it's meat and whatnot? I know I have a pet. He's a dog. Anytime I catch him getting into the snack container that is plastic lined, you usually find the evidence when I pick up his droppings in the backyard. It kind of just goes right through him. So I'm not sure how much of the plastic actually is absorbed through the digestive system and into his muscle mass and you know, down to the nitty gritty of the body. So I just kind of curious how much of it is actually absorbed.
All right. Thanks for the call, Jeremy. Lorena?
Yeah, you know, this is a very interesting question because it's one of the studies that we are doing. Because you know the plastic contains toxic compounds, we need to know what is the kinetics. This means what is the time to take to transfer the toxic compounds absorbed in the surface of the plastic to the tissue in the organism. And it depends what is the size the organism can just ingest and eject that he see with his pet. But sometimes it depends what is the fragment, you know, can be stuck in the body. And then if this fragment of plastic has some toxic and then has enough time to go to the organism, you know.
Let's talk about plastic pollution in Lake Winnebago. You've established already that we've got this microscopic plastic pollution in the Great Lakes, including Lake Superior. How bad is the pollution in Lake Winnebago?
You know, we can see that it's really, the wastewater treatment plant is one of the source or the points that go to the plastic to the lake. And we saw the a really good concentration of this plastic, but I didn't the analysis of the toxic compounds, but that we want to find is if really the lake has the microplastic. And yes, it has microplastic. And this, and the smaller sizes that I'm saying is easily to ingest by the organism, like a fish. But we don't open any stomach fish.
Now, you were quoted in a Milwaukee Journal Sentinel article as advising people against eating fish from certain areas of Lake Winnebago. Was that an accurate quote? And if it was, why did you say it?
No, I don't say don't eat the fish. That I'm saying is if the fish is eating the plastic, and if the plastic has these toxic compounds, we don't know if the problem with these toxic compounds ended in the fish, in the organism of the fish, because some of these compounds are endocrine disruptors. And then maybe it just can finish in the organism of the fish or when we eat at the fish, if the problem were with us. This is something that we don't know yet.
So we don't know it yet. You're not advising people against eating fish in Lake Winnebago, correct?
Correct.
Because fishing is a big industry and a big tourist draw to that lake. We have sturgeons harvested there every spring. But still, I imagine the fact that we have this pollution is kind of, it should be a matter of concern.
Yeah, you know, this is why it's important that we need to know really what is the problem, because the plastic is another source of the toxic compounds. If we're just thinking in the plastic alone, just the clean plastic, you know, the plastic is a huge polymer and a huge change of polymer that has prohibited interact with the cell membrane. And then we can think it's not reactive or it's not really bad because it can in and out in the organism. But the problem is with the toxic compounds that can have absorbed on the surface.
Now, you mentioned that these microbeads are being discharged into Lake Winnebago and into the Great Lakes from wastewater treatment plants. Why don't these plants have treatment facilities with filters that would be fine enough to catch the tiny particles before they enter the lakes?
Because, you know, the when the wastewater treatment plants were built, then the main objective was just kill bacteria. You know, and then now we have this new problem with the microplastic, and we have another problem with the another tiny compounds, like the medicine, the hormones, the legal, illegal drugs that cannot be retained in the wastewater treatment plant and go to the effluent water.
Well, Autumn Fisher, who's the supervisor of the Fond du Lac Wastewater Treatment Plant, is quoted in the Journal Sentinel as saying that it would cost tens of millions of dollars to upgrade the plant so it caught all of the microscopic plastic pieces that are being discharged. And she said that's a hard sell because the plant is already going to face significant costs, meeting a, meeting a new DNR rule regarding phosphorus discharges. So the cost is something that is standing in the way, Lorena, of cleaning up some of these problems.
Yeah, it is true, you know, but it is true, too, that we have a responsibility for the future. And then we found that this problem, and we need to try to find the solution, you know. This is why I think, always I say to my students, you know, we need the young people there with the new ideas, maybe some crazy ideas, but can work. And then we need to test it. And let me tell you, in Europe already, the wastewater treatment plant start to redesign it because of the plastic pollution.
Let's go to Phyllis in De Pere. Phyllis, you're on with Lorena Rios Mendoza.
Hello. A couple days ago, I heard a report that they sampled bottled water, quite a variety of brands, and that there was small pieces of plastic in all the water, in all the bottled water. And also, it seems like the solution for these microbeads is not to try to take it out of the water, but to forbid it being put in any products that's going to go into the water in the first place. Thank you. I'd like her to comment about that.
All right. Phyllis, thanks so much for the phone call. Lorena, your reaction to what Phyllis just had to say.
Yeah, you know, in the plastic water bottles, yeah, maybe you can find some leftover of the plastic or something, but my main concern with this plastic bottle is the phthalate. It's one chemical that they put it to make the plastic soft, and we did some exploratory research here at the University of Wisconsin Superior, and we found the phthalate, concentration of phthalates in the water. And for the microbeads, already in the federal law, is banned the use the polyethylene and polypropylene, mainly polyethylene, in the cosmetic products. And that I'm thinking to do is a new research to see it, what they change for another kind of plastic, or they really change for another type, the scrub or something. And that I'm saying too, you know, if you have already one cosmetic product with the polyethylene ingredient, you can send to us, the university, and we can use it to a study, or you can send to the company, you know, and because it's not just throw away in the garbage can, because we need to involve all the parts in the problem.
All right, very good. Lorena Rios Mendoza is an associate professor of chemistry at UW-Superior. She's an internationally renowned researcher on microscopic plastic pollution in oceans and lakes. It's the morning show. I'm Glenn Moberg, and for Kate Archer Kent, we'll have more on the Great Pacific Garbage Patch and the tiny plastic particles that are posing threats to our big lakes in Wisconsin after this news. It's the morning show. I'm Glenn Mobergen for Kate Archer Kent. The Great Pacific Garbage Patch, twice the size of Texas in the Pacific Ocean, containing 79,000 tons of plastic debris. But as we've been hearing this hour, it's the small stuff plastic particles nearly invisible to the naked eye that we need to really be concerned about. Lorena Rios Mendoza is an associate professor of chemistry at UW Superior and an internationally renowned researcher on microscopic plastic pollution in oceans and lakes. If you've got a question, you can give us a call at 1-800-642-1234. That's 1-800-642-1234. Or you can email us at ideas@wpr.org or tweet us at WPR Mornings. Lorena, in 2013, you led an expedition that set sail from Chicago looking for a Great Lakes garbage patch. What, if anything, did you find?
You know that we were to the Lake Michigan, Huron, and Lake Erie, but, and again, we found it mainly fibers, and we found it microbeads, and a lot the microscopic plastic, but the mass was very low, and then I cannot do any analysis of the toxic compounds. But the only is that, again, grabbed attention is the sizes of this microplastic.
Are the currents in the Great Lakes different from the current patterns in the oceans? Would that make it more difficult for plastic to accumulate in big patches in the Great Lakes, or is that something that we may need to worry about in the future?
You know, yes, it's totally different. There are two different systems. And that I can see that we found that just microplastic, very, very small sizes in the lakes, is because the lake itself is like a clean it, you know, it's like a vomit. All the plastic, the big items or the big fragments go to the beach again. And then it's just in and out, it's moving, you know, until the sizes is very small and then it can stay in the water.
And how bad is the plastic pollution in Lake Michigan, and how bad is it in Lake Superior again? Because these are the lakes that border Wisconsin.
Yeah, you know, the Lake Superior, I can see, is the, I can tell you that it's low, the concentration of the plastic, but it's not mean it's good, you know, or it's good because it's plastic, it's pollution. But it's because we have less people around to the Lake Superior. But if we go into close to the Canada, and we can find more microbeads, reproduction plastic, because they have about one a huge area for the plastic production. And in the Lake Michigan, we found more concentration of the microplastic, and it's related with the people, more plastic.
You're saying that in Lake Superior it was worse as you get to the Canadian side of the lake? Why would that be?
Yeah, because they have more plastic industry, and then you can find more reproduction plastic.
Where is the plastic coming from? Is it all coming from wastewater treatment plants, or is it coming from rainwater and runoff, or are there other sources?
Everywhere, you know, and sometimes if you have one plastic industry, is normally it's a spill, you know, because the plastic is so cheap, and then they were really don't pay attention before, because 1 pound costs like a $1 and contain more than 25,000 micro pellets, the plastic, and we have a different sources, you know, that can go to the river, and the river to the lake, and the lake to the ocean.
And again, these microplastics are a problem because they pick up pollution. From a Michigan Public Radio story about microplastic pollution in the Great Lakes, here's a quote: plastic particles attract chemical pollutants and carry them around. The plastic turns into kind of a magic carpet, giving PCBs and DDT and dioxins a ride around the lake. Is that accurate?
Yes, they can concentrate. That I'm saying, the smaller the size of the plastic, this means it has more surface area and then can concentrate more these toxic compounds. And it's accumulating, you know. It's like a sponge. It's taking more and more and more, and then more time stayed in one area where can found this kind of toxic compounds can more concentrate. This is the problem, that the smaller the size can concentrate toxic compounds.
Now, state and national bans on the sale of products containing microbeads have gone into effect. Do we have any sense of whether this has made an impact on this type of pollution?
You know, already we have a lot of microplastics. How long it takes to take it up or clean it from the lakes, we really don't know. that I'm saying, I really, they change, maybe they are using different kind of plastic.
1-800-642-1234 if you'd like to talk to Lorena Rios Mendoza about plastic pollution in our Great Lakes or in the Pacific Ocean, where they found the Great Pacific Garbage Patch, twice the size of Texas now and growing exponentially. We've got wide open phone lines if you'd like to weigh in or ask her a question. Again, that's 1-800-642-1234. You've been quoted as saying... and again, this is from Michigan Public Radio. They teach you the three R's, recycle, reuse, and reduce. And you said, I like to say refuse. If you don't need it, don't use it. Comment on that, if you could.
Yes, you know, because normally in the school that I'm saying, they teach you the TRs, reduce, reuse, and recycle. But now we have the option to refuse. If we don't need to use plastic, don't use it. You know, because later we can find it in the lake or in the ocean. And it's not just because you don't see the plastic around you, this don't mean the plastic is not a problem. You know, and the people that is living more close to the ocean or the big areas with a lot of people, they can see the problem, you know, with the plastic.
How can you convince people to use less plastic? Lorena, it's used in everything we consume. Cardboard milk containers have been replaced by plastic. Glass soda bottles have been replaced by plastic. Everything we buy is shrink-wrapped. I mean, realistically, how can you tell people to refuse to use it? We don't seem to have a choice.
You know, we have a choice, but it's difficult, and I know it's a little painful, but we need to think in the future. You know, in our children's. And I know that the plastic industry is working too, and you can see how they start to changing the plastic for glass. You know, I like it to go to the $1 stores where they have a lot of plastic, and now I can see how they are changing a little. They have a more glass than plastic. And then why? Because the glass we can recycle, but the plastic, no.
Let's go back to the phones. John in Madison, you're on with Lorena Rios Mendoza. Hello, John.
Good morning. Thanks for taking my call. I guess I'm wondering, you know, if all of this plastic is gathering in the ocean between California and Hawaii, and it's a constant thing because of the currents and the wind, you go in there and just continually clean it up and dispose of it, and I'll take my answer off the air. Thanks.
Lorena, why can't we just clean it all up and dispose of it?
You know, this is a dream that we want to have, yes, how we can clean. I don't know if we can invent it like a vacuum, magic vacuum, and then we can clean it, but it's so difficult. And then the only way that we can stop this pollution is stopping the source, and that I'm saying we are the source, the people. This is the only way that we can do it. And in the ocean, you know, in 2005 that we did, we put it the huge GPS that NOAA gave us, and we put it in the ghost net because they are huge, and they later can go to pick it up. And normally they go to try to clean it, but it's so difficult.
Let's go to a phone call from Tom in Wauwatosa. Tom, you're on the morning show with Lorena Rios Mendoza. Hello, Tom in Wauwatosa. Let's go to Eddie in Sun Prairie. Eddie, you're on the morning show with Lorena Rios Mendoza. Hello, Eddie.
Hi.
Eddie, you're on the radio with Lorena Rios Mendoza. Your comment or your question for her?
Excellent. Good morning. I was recently on a rather remote island in the Bahamas and was struck by the amount of large plastic garbage of drums, flip-flops, just a wide variety of large plastic garbage on the beaches there, and just wondering where all that comes from. And I'll take my answer off the air.
Lorena?
Yes, normally they're saying the main is from the land, is the main source, and the other source is the boat, the fishing or the recreation.
So it's primarily from people who have boats and people who are recreational users of the ocean?
It's mainly from land, and then the secondary could be the boats, yes. Recreational fishing, yeah.
Let's see if we can squeeze in one more phone call. Let's go to Kenneth in Janesville. Kenneth, do we have Kenneth, or are we going to, let's try Ann in Green Bay. Ann, you're on the morning show with Lorena Rios-Mendoza.
Well, I just want to quickly mention that there is a documentary out there called Plastic Paradise, The Great Pacific Garbage Patch. You can get it at the library. I highly recommend people that go and watch that documentary. It's just quite frightening.
All right. Well, thank you for that contribution. Lorena, have you seen that film?
Yeah, normally I think, you know, the Algalita Marine Research Foundation and Education, they are working with that, and the Fajar Institute, they are working too with the other patch.
You know, Lorena, we've been pretty painting kind of a bleak picture today about this problem in the Pacific Ocean, the problem in the Great Lakes and Lake Winnebago. Are you hopeful that we'll be able to make a dent in all of this pollution, clean things up, and have a cleaner ocean and cleaner Great Lakes?
Yeah, you know, I think the main thing is that the people, the community, need to know that we have a problem with the plastic. And then when the people start to thinking that, okay, this is a problem, and then we start to using the plastic container or try to reuse more the plastic, and then I think we can find the solution.
All right, very good. Thank you so much for joining us today. Lorena Rios-Mendoza is an associate professor of chemistry at UW-Superior and an internationally known researcher on microscopic plastic pollution in our oceans and lakes. The Morning Show is produced by Brianne Chasso and Keely Baltina. Michael Derringer is providing technical direction for us this morning. Michelle Johnson is the executive producer. Coming up tomorrow at this time, our kids are not getting enough to eat, or at least not the right kinds of foods. We'll be talking about food insecurity on our campuses, especially during school holidays like spring break. I'm Glenn Moberg, and for Kate Archer Kent, this is The Morning Show on the Ideas Network.